The buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison and Dawson Wise joining me in studio today on a Wednesday live from Knoxville, Tennessee. We appreciate you listening along with us. 865-288-3131 if you want to come in and join. Dawson, the play-in game took place last night. Two of them in the Western Conference. Lakers and Pelicans. Warriors and Kings. One of them went the way we thought it would go.
Right.
The other was a big surprise.
It did not go the way we thought
We're going to have a fun segment in hour number two when we talk about the Warriors and Brick Brother, Klay Thompson.
<back.
laughs> Oh, my goodness. I love the NBA playoffs because everyone comes out of the woodwork on Twitter and the memes were rolling. I was dying laughing all last night. Great time of the year. But we got so much to talk about in this first hour, including the Lakers raining threes on the Pelicans parade. As always, we'll give our best bets at the end of the hour. But first things first, presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events, private communities, and special discounts on Fan Run merchandise. Join on fanrunradio.com today. And today's first topic is baseball's Blast Bellarmine. Number two, Tennessee, ran its winning streak to seven games with a 20-5 midweek victory over Bellarmine on Tuesday night in Lindsey Nelson Stadium. The Vols started fast with seven runs in the second inning to take an early lead and went on to score in six of the eight innings they batted in, finishing with six home runs and 20 hits on the night. It sounds like, did you ever play Mario Baseball growing up on the Wii?
The Super Sluggers?
Yeah, Super Sluggers. That's what it sounds like. I mean, just an absolute dominating performance from the Vols. And Blake Burke, he was a part of that group. Went 2-for-2 with a grand slam in UT's seven-run second inning, the first of his career. It was Burke's 13th home run of the season and 43rd of his career, putting him back in the lead for career home runs at Tennessee, one ahead of Christian Moore. As we were talking about yesterday, this is going to be a fun battle to see between Simo and Blake Burke.
Yeah.
Who's going to take this final crown? A fun little competition between the team. Burke's single in the first inning also extended his hitting streak to 27 straight games, tying Condridge Holloway's 49-year-old program record. That was set back in 1975. Pretty cool stat there. Reese Chapman also had a big night at the dish, recording his first multi-homer game while driving in three runs and scoring three of his own. Kavarez Tears, Charlie Taylor, Colby Bacchus also went deep for the Big Orange in the win as the Vols tied their single season high with six long balls, marking the fourth time this year they've accomplished that feat, which is already impressive to do at one time, let alone four times in one season. Seven different players recorded multiple hits for UT, led by Ariel Antigua's career-high three base knocks, while 10 separate Vols drove in at least one run. Now, talking about the pitching, Marcus Phillips, a guy we'll talk a little bit more about here in a second, made his first career start on the mound, looked very sharp in two innings of work, retiring all six batters he faced with a pair of strikeouts. Really nice effort from him.
Absolutely.
Matthew Dallas, a guy we've talked about a little bit on here from Memphis, Tennessee, my hometown, picked up the first victory of his career after tossing 1.1 scoreless innings of relief with one punchout. Brady Robertson, Derek Schaefer, J.J. Garcia all had scoreless outings as well out of the bullpen. With the win, Vols now improved to 26-2 at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, 10-0 in the midweek. Very important to focus on the midweek, as we've talked about throughout the season so far. A lot of teams overlook these matchups. Tennessee's done a really good job of making sure they're on task, especially with a big matchup this weekend against Kentucky.
Huge matchup.
Yeah. And then last weekend facing LSU, a lot of thoughts on that. Tennessee has done a really good job handling the midweek. My takeaways, one of them, handling the midweek. Second thing, the offense is just fun to watch. I mean, if you know, you just want to go see Tennessee play some fun baseball, even though Bellarmine is not a big name or you know, like an LSU or an SEC team we face, If you just want to go see some fun offense and your team do well, go check the Vols out on a midweek game, because they play really well offensively, and yesterday was just another example of that. I really liked the pitching yesterday. You know, we've talked about the pitching from kind of the starters and the guys that are more involved in the bigger games, but it's good to see guys like Marcus Phillips get in there, Matthew Dallas, guys that have promising careers ahead of them, getting some experience on the mound. Granted, it's against a lesser opponent, it's still good to see these guys get going and have good outings. So those are my takeaways. Handling the midweek, the offense is so fun to watch. An impressive performance from the pitching. What do you say, Dawson?
Yeah, first thing, taking care of business. Look, continue to cruise through these midweek games. Yeah, it's fun to watch. Yet to have a ton of trouble with these opponents, no matter who you're facing.
Yeah.
Gone are the days of losing to Tennessee Tech or Boston College or whoever comes to Lindsey Nelson or to Smoky Stadium in that infamous Woodbat game.
Yeah, let's let that one go.
Yeah. Hey, sometimes you're like, man, we really did play that game.
Yeah.
Anyway, but no matter what, those days are gone, and this team just is on a different level when they're facing their midweek opponent, and they've been able to take care of business really easily. The second thing, the depth hitters continue to impress. Reese Chapman, another excellent effort for him. Charlie Taylor went yard last night. Colby Backus, again, another good effort from him as well. It's a very encouraging sign for this team. You've got so much flexibility for bats off the bench, and that's something that this team has not had before. Now, you know, I have several guys now, including Reese Chapman and Backus and Dalton Bargo and others, Charlie Taylor now included, that I would trust to come up and get us a hit in a pinch hit scenario where, you know, you're in a big spot, you need a pinch hit, you know, a home run or a hit, and you can turn to 5-6 guys off the bench. It's something this team hasn't had. So encouraging to see it this year with all these young guys, these depth guys getting involved. And then the young pitchers dealing, Marcus Phillips, goodness, he looked very good. Matthew Dallas gets back on track. Good for him. And the others look sharp as well. Even if they're not going to see a ton of action this year, which many of them are not, you know, you're going to need these guys in the coming years. This is your next man up when Drew Beam leaves, when A.J. Causey leaves, when A.J. Russell leaves. You know, these are your next guys up. When Xander Seacrest leaves that Sunday spot next year, you're going to need a guy to fill that spot. It could be one of these freshmen. Love to see those guys dealing. They did it again last night, and they're starting to stake their case to get that Sunday spot, to get that bigger role come next year.
So let's talk about, and I hate to bring this up, but, you know, do you think these midweek wins should be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt, looking at the competition that the Vols have matched up against in the midweek? Bellarmine is 6-30 on the year. Who was it last week? Alabama A&M, I think, was 5-29 on the year going into it. Obviously, these are not very talented teams, and it's important to win in the midweek, but I think when you look around the country, there's some teams that are playing a little bit harder competition around the league. So it was just a thought I had when I was kind of preparing for the show today. It was, you know, you obviously want to win in the midweek, but some of these offensive performances, these bursts, they look so good on paper, but then you got to keep in mind you're playing Bellarmine. Do you kind of take these wins with a grain of salt?
I'm going to say no. You do have a few impressive wins. That Kansas State win comes to mind early in the year. I think that was a very impressive win for the manner in which you won that game, and that's kind of what I'm about to get into.
Yeah.
considering that game was not very close. And that's kind of what I was going to get into. Look, yeah, you're not playing very talented teams, but you're not winning these games 5-4, 8-2, 9-2. You're winning them 20-5. I mean, you're going out there and you're run-ruling teams. You're putting up 20s pretty much every week, it feels like, and ending these games in 7 innings. If you were winning these games against these teams, you know, 8-4 or 9-3, where you did just enough, it felt like, okay, yeah, then I take them with a grain of salt. Wow, you know, you won 9-3. Well, yeah, but you won against a 6-30 team. Oh, you won 22-4. Like, I mean, that's a lot more impressive to me. No matter who your opponent is, I mean, you score 22 runs. That's a very impressive feat. And then I also look at what some other teams are doing around the country. Kentucky last Tuesday loses to Samford. Auburn loses to, I think, North Alabama a couple weeks ago, if I recall correctly. Florida. You want to talk about midweek issues? Yeah. The Florida Gators are, I think, what, 18-15, 19-15, something like that. Mm-hmm. Most of those losses are midweek games. So if you look around and these teams above you or behind you in the rankings are struggling, if you're 10-0, I don't care who you played, you're doing better than them. So to me, I'm going to say no because, number one, you're still undefeated when everyone else is having problems, and number two, you're winning these games in dominant fashion.
Yeah. With their six homers on Tuesday night, the Big Orange have now hit an NCAA-leading 101 on the season, marking the third consecutive season they have hit 100-plus long balls. What does this stat kind of show about this year's team? I know in years past we've had very dynamic offenses. We've talked about how this year's team is able to go yard with it, but is also able to keep it in the ballpark, you know, get on base by hitting it through the gaps. I think that's what this team is better at. But just talk about the consistency of the Tennessee program. Now, this is a team that's going to light you up offensively and be consistent with it over the, you know, stretch of while Vitello is here, I'm guessing. So when you hear that stat, what do you think?
I think that this team, you know, can still mash. I think most of our focus, you know, over the past couple weeks has been, oh, this team can do it other ways. This team can get on base. This team can work the base pass. And sometimes, you know, we kind of not overlook it. Like, we know what power this team brings, but then they have a night like this and you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
They can still really mash the baseball. And they have a mountain of pop. We saw it, you know, against Auburn a couple weekends ago, against Georgia a few weekends ago. And every now and then they just remind you that, you know, despite the fact, oh, yeah, we can play small ball this year,
yeah,
we can also win games by hitting nine homers a night, which mm-hmm. which is incredible. And to me, it also, that stat also shows the quality of hitters you have from top to bottom, because, you know, 101 homers, look at how they're spread out. I mean, your top five hitters, it's like 15, 12, 13, 12, 13. So
yeah.
It's not like one guy has 30. It's not like you have, and all respect to Charlie Condon here, but it's not like you have Charlie Condon who's hit, I don't remember what the number is at this point. I think it's over 20.
Yeah.
And then the rest of your lineup has 25, maybe. Mm-hmm. This team has, you know, guys that are pretty close together, anywhere from 9 to 15 homers. And it shows the quality that you have, the capability that 1 through 9 has to push this stat even further on a nightly basis. These guys are seeing the ball well, barreling it up at an even higher level than past Vols teams have.
Yeah, Ryan chimes in and sent the current roster, I guess the standings. So Tennessee with 101 home runs in 37 games. Georgia, a team, you know, we already beat earlier in the season a couple weeks ago, with 94. Austin Peay, another Tennessee State team, with 91.
Nice.
And then after 1, 2, 3, Florida is fourth with 78. So Tennessee currently the only triple-digit home run number this season. Pretty impressive for Tony Vitello's group. Now, going to the defensive side, at the mound, Marcus Phillips, a guy we talked about earlier, making his first career start, looked very sharp, looked very composed, retiring all six batters he faced, pair of strikeouts as well. We know in the midweek, Vitello likes to get a couple of these pitchers involved that don't necessarily see action in the SEC games and the weekend matchups. But again, these are guys, you know, come the end of your season, you need to be, you know, you need to be able to pull a guy out of your bullpen. You could turn to one of these guys. You never know the situation. So I like how Vitello is always in these midweek games, taking the most of the opportunity, involving guys like Marcus Phillips. And now we get a really big performance from him. How about Marcus Phillips?
Yeah, massive to have this kind of effort out of him. Very encouraging. Again, not a guy that you're going to see make a ton of impact this year, but a guy that could. I mean, absolutely could. And when his time comes, when he gets the limelight, I mean, boy, is he going to be ready for that moment.
Yeah.
Because of efforts like this, because he gets these opportunities, it's going to be, you know, a huge moment for him when he finally gets to step in the spotlight. It's because he gets to pitch in the midweek.
Yeah.
Because Vitello gives him these opportunities to go out there, and this one just the cherry on top. I was actually going to mention it. You know, you're getting to the point now, even in SEC play, where, you know, your bullpen gets torched in a game,
yeah,
or you know, you've burned some arms over the course of the weekend. Okay, you need to go grab from your midweek. If you can grab a Marcus Phillips and he can go out and get you a couple innings, that is massive. I mean,
yeah,
invaluable to this team,
mm-hmm,
especially when you get to the postseason. Say we're in Hoover, and we had this problem last year,
yes,
where you have to pitch a bullpen game,
yeah,
and you need a guy to come in and start that bullpen game. Tennessee didn't really have that guy last year,
no,
it didn't feel like. This year, if it can be Marcus Phillips and he can give you a start, heck, even in Omaha, I mean, massive. That's
huge.
That's part of what won LSU a championship last year.
Yes,
is the fact that they had those guys that they could say, go out and get me two innings to start this game, because our starters are burned, their arms are burned. So that'll be massive. this whole freshman class is so electric. They're going to be so fun to watch when they get to this point. But to see them already succeeding, really, really encouraging.
Yeah, they're fun. Now, taking a quick peek to this weekend, obviously a big matchup looming with the Wildcats. Just initially, I know you're not going to be here with us tomorrow and Friday, so kind of give, I guess, your full-fledged take. What do you think about this Vols matchup with Kentucky? Obviously, kind of some people think they got slighted this week. Tennessee did in the polls, having Kentucky jump Tennessee despite going 4-0 last week. An opportunity to now go prove it. You have the opportunity to back it up. So I think it's a really big opportunity. Kentucky's played really well this season, sweeping Georgia, sweeping Alabama, sweeping Ole Miss. They've been really good in SEC play. There's no doubt about it. But Tennessee is one of the hottest offenses in the country. Can they continue that this weekend? Can we get the same pitching production as we did last series against LSU this past weekend? Can we get that against Kentucky? We'll have to see. Those are my initial thoughts as we talk about it, but I know you're not going to be here Thursday and Friday, so what do you think about this matchup?
I went ahead and did my statistical deep dive on this, too.
Do it. Let's do it.
So the matchup to watch is going to be Tennessee's lineup against Kentucky's pitching. Hitting-wise, compared between the two teams, Tennessee a .330 team average, Kentucky only .291. 97 doubles for Kentucky, or for Tennessee, 75 for Kentucky. Obviously, the home run number is going to stick out.
Yeah.
Kentucky only 47 home runs compared to the Vols 101. Tennessee scores 10.3 runs per game, which again is a crazy stat. Kentucky actually scores 8.4. Better on base percentage, better slugging percentage. In terms of hitting, Kentucky's best hitters are there three guys at the top of the lineup: Lopez, Ryan Waldschmidt, and Emelian Petrie. All hitting over 300, but only 13 home runs combined. So not a huge power threat, but again, know how to get on base. Guys that know how to work the base pass, get that single, get that double, and kind of start the train moving. That's how Kentucky scores a lot of their runs. Their leading home run hitter is Ryan Nicholson with 10. To preface that, Blake Burke, I think, leads the Vols with 15.
Yeah.
So, a little bit of
a difference.
And then again,
there.
You have five guys, 1 through 5, all have 12 or more. So. Yeah. A little bit different look there. Kentucky, serious edge in pitching. Only a 3.27 team ERA this year to Tennessee's 5.39, which says a lot. Kentucky only gives up a .196 batting average, which is a really stark statistic.
Yes.
I mean, even a 3 ERA, I mean, to only give up .196, that's intense. The strikeout numbers are similar. Kentucky's only given up 57 runs all year. In about 30 games, which, again,
very
stark statistic.
Yes.
Tennessee, 82 runs over the course of the season on 138 hits given up. Kentucky's only allowed 11 home runs in their first 30 games. Tennessee, 25. So those are the kind of stats. The weekend starters for Kentucky are likely going to be Trey Pusser, who's 3-0, 4.11 ERA, 35 innings, 30 hits, 16 earned runs, 13 walks and 33 strikeouts, a .229 average against him. He'll probably be their Friday night guy. Their Saturday night guy will be, my guess would be Mason Moore, 7-0, 3.45 ERA in 47 innings, only 33 hits, only 18 runs, 22 walks and 43 strikeouts, and a .199 opposing batting average. Their Sunday guy, probably Dominic Niemann, 7-2, a 3.4 ERA, 53 innings pitched, 44 hits, 20 earned runs, 14 walks, 47 Ks, and a .221 average. That is a good staff.
Yeah.
And an experienced staff for the amount of starts that they have. I mean, because these guys are going, 5, 6, 7 innings in their starts. So the matchup to watch, can Tennessee's lineup get to Kentucky's pitching? Obviously, you're going to need good pitching performance, but Kentucky's lineup is not like LSU's. It's not like Ole Miss, where you're going to have that big power lineup, that big scoring lineup. It's really not. What wins them games is their pitching. The secret's going to be, can this Tennessee lineup break through and get to Kentucky like they have in past weekends?
Yeah, real strength-on-strength matchup.
It's going to be fun to watch.
Kentucky's defense versus Tennessee's offense, I think. And because of that, it's going to be how well Tennessee's able to pitch and how well Kentucky's is able to hit. And that might be the deciding factor if the rubber match no one comes out of. So, really looking forward to that matchup. Great analysis, by the way. That was guns blazing. That was good. All right. When we come back, we'll talk about how the Lakers rained threes on the Pelicans parade last night in New Orleans. We'll be right back to break it down here on Overtime.
White Claw is taking hard seltzer to new heights with White Claw Surge. At 8% alcohol, White Claw Surge is a stronger wave of refreshment that doesn't compromise on taste. Available in four bold waves of flavor like ripe blackberry, citrusy blood orange, zesty natural lime, and tart cranberry. Check out your favorite retailer in-store and online for the White Claw Surge Variety 12-pack and 16-ounce single-serve cans. White Claw Surge, please drink responsibly.
Hey guys, it's Logan Quinton from the 920 Podcast and Fan Run Varsity Spotlight. Yes, it's the Cookie Man, and I'm here to tell you about something sweet. Crumbled Cookies is the fastest growing cookie company in the nation. After only 4 years, 500 plus stores are in operation in 50 states, with many more in build out. Just a reminder to go see the Crumble crew at Parkside Drive or Clinton Highway. And please, come check out the new location in Maryville. 1765 West Broadway, Suite C.
A brand built in Tennessee and born from the love of the game. Inward Half revolutionizes golfing comfort. Crafted by a former pro and dedicated enthusiast just like you, our luxury performance wear guarantees you stay cool and comfortable through every swing and every day. We're not just a brand. We've set out to create a lifestyle for those who understand that impeccable style and premium performance are a hole-in-one. Enjoy the walk-in with Inward Half.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. Axel Logistics, now is your time.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Go ahead, feel your engine. Admire that perfectly installed exhaust. Your vehicle's moving along this freeway like it was made from fresh installs and a whole lot of love. With eBay Motors, you get over 122 million parts to keep it running. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, they'll be the perfect fit every time. Plus, at these prices, well, we're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you tired of spending hours on laundry and ironing? Let Crown Cleaners handle your dry cleaning so you can handle your business. Our expert team can take care of your clothes, removing stains and wrinkles like they were never there. Whether it's your best suit or everyday attire, we handle it all at Crown Cleaners. Say goodbye to laundry stress and hello to extra free time. Crown Cleaners, Big Orange Country's imperial dry cleaning service since the 1960s. Online at crowncleaners.com.
All right, back here on Overtime. We apologize for some technical difficulties on the stream. I think we're all back on and good. We welcome you in if you're just now joining us. Great first conversation to begin the hour about the Base Vols dominating Bellarmine in the midweek game yesterday. But now it's time to shift and pivot to the NBA, where the Lakers rain threes on the Pelicans parade. After a disastrous loss to the Los Angeles Lakers to close their regular season, the New Orleans Pelicans sought redemption in the opening game of the NBA play-in tournament on Tuesday. Instead of redemption, the Pels got a high-intensity affair that ended in a 110-106 loss after Zion Williamson's 40-point game suffered a quick exit, a very timely exit, in the latter moments of the game, left with an injury. A very interesting, kind of shady injury. He started limping off the court and then heads to the bench, and you see him throw down the towel, head to the bench. There wasn't a lot of information given after that incident. And as a result, the Lakers are able to pull away with the win. The Lakers earned a meeting with the defending champion Nuggets in Denver on Saturday in the first round of the playoffs. The Pelicans will host the Sacramento Kings, who knocked out the Golden State Warriors last night in an elimination matchup on Friday. We'll talk more about that Golden State and Kings game. Now, we've learned today Zion Williamson out for that matchup. We'll break it down tomorrow. But that's a really big miss for them. Zion was so good down the stretch. We'll talk a little bit more about him here in a second. But for the Lakers, LeBron James, a team-high 23 to go alongside 9 assists and 9 rebounds. D'Angelo Russell, really, really big. Scored 21 points, 7 assists, 5 of 11 from the three-point line. And former Pelican Anthony Davis put up 20 and a game-high 15 rebounds. My takeaways from the Lakers game, and the Lakers win. So I was at dinner last night, didn't get the chance to watch the first half, watch the second half. But down the stretch, when the Lakers took that big lead, it was because of their three-point shooting, because it was their length. They were getting it done, playing very similar to how they played against the Pelicans on Sunday. And then all of a sudden, Zion Williamson. I mean, that was really his big coming-out party because – he hasn't had a moment or an opportunity like that in a playoff environment, playoff situation yet in his career, and he was huge. And you look up and, I was texting my buddy. I was like, Lakers going to play the Nuggets again. All of a sudden you look up, it's a two-point game. And the Lakers in the final moments were able to get it done with three-point shooting, really good defense. It's what they've been so good at over this stretch since February. D'Angelo Russell, how big was he? I mean, last year in the Western Conference Finals, the guy averaged 4 points a night and was almost going to be traded back in February at the trade deadline. Now he's putting up 21 points, 5 of 11 shooting, very efficient. They need his production throughout the rest of these playoffs. He was a big reason why they got it done last night. And Gabe Vincent, a guy that has barely been in the lineup this year because he's been so hurt, he was really efficient last night too, defensively and offensively. Getting production from those guys, I thought, was instrumental for them to get it done. Lakers end up hitting 14 threes. The target I gave yesterday was 15, just one shy. The Lakers needed it. I wanted them to win. We talked about it yesterday, and now they'll face off with the Nuggets once again. What were your takeaways from the Lakers' win?
Ultimately, the Pelicans could not limit LeBron and AD, at least not as much as they needed to. One of our keys yesterday was slowing down these two superstars and making everybody else beat you.
Yeah.
And you couldn't do that. They both got over 20 points. They both contributed in other ways as well. Obviously, AD dominated on the glass. LeBron, 9 boards, 9 assists for him as well. So they were able to get their role going. The Pelicans were never able to really find an answer. Maybe a little bit better effort than last time on LeBron, but it ultimately wasn't enough, and that's because they got the role guys involved. This was another one of my keys yesterday, is they needed to have somebody else. They needed to have an Austin Reeves or a D'Angelo Russell or a Gabe Vincent get involved in this game. They had more than that. I mean, D'Lo, Reeves, Vincent, Rui Hachimura was good in his minutes as well.
Yes, he was, yes.
They all had good nights, and they got enough contribution from guys not named LeBron and AD to get them over the finish line, to help them win this game. 16 from Austin Reeves. That's the kind of performance you need from a guy like that. We talked about Russell. Big efforts for those guys on the supporting cast, Russell especially. And like you said, I mean, they're going to need it. If they're going to make any run at the Nuggets, they're going
to
need him. If they can have him, I mean, you never know what could happen. In that series. And then last thing, Zion dazzled, but came up just short. Zion did everything he could to win this game for the Pelicans. I did not think he would come out and put up 40. I thought maybe he'd get to 20 or 25, and they lose by double digits. And you look up, and it's a one-score game most of that fourth quarter. He leaves with a really untimely injury, and the Pelicans end up falling short of what we did not think would happen, and that's the fact they would be in the game, let alone have a chance to win it late in that game. It's a great performance from him that is unfortunately going to be overshadowed by the fact that not only did he get injured, but they ended up losing the game.
Yeah, the Lakers went 3-1 in the regular season against the Pelicans, average win margin of plus 16. Zion, going back to him, 40 points, 11 rebounds, walks to the locker room in the final minutes of the game. Willie Green, head coach of the Pelicans, said it was left leg soreness, which is shady wording, because if a guy is sore with 2 minutes left in basically a win-or-go-home game, I doubt that he would willingly take himself out. I don't think it's soreness. As we now know, he's not going to be able to play the remainder of the play-in tournament. How odd was the Zion injury? Just like all of a sudden you look up and he's running to the locker, or not even running, limping to the locker room. It just was odd, in my opinion.
Yeah, when you go back and watch the play, I had to watch it a few times to like find where he got hurt. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he makes this play, makes a bucket, and starts to jog back down the court and get back on defense, and all of a sudden there's a timeout called and he's limping to the bench.
Yeah.
And he pulls his jersey up over his head, and you're like, what happened? I mean, because you go back and watch it, I mean, there's no visible sign that he got hurt.
No.
And then he's limping to the locker room, and you're like, what was that? I mean, yeah. All of a sudden the best player on the floor for the Pelicans is out of the game and going to the locker room in the biggest moment.
Yeah.
And it was so weird because I was like, really, that's it? I mean, he's going to go to the locker room? Yeah. It doesn't even look really all that hurt. I mean, he looked obviously very frustrated, so I'm not doubting that he was injured, but – just a weird moment, and considering, I mean, this was the healthiest season of his career. He played over 70 games yes. this year for New Orleans. It finally seemed to break the injury bug that had gotten him since he got into the league.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, man, it bites him now during the postseason. Now, he does have a history of this kind of injury going back to his time at Duke. So there is a bit of an explanation for it, but just such bad timing that it happened at the end of the game.
Yeah, so it didn't help either that C.J. McCollum decided to build a house of his own with bricks. Him and Klay Thompson must have been talking on the phone before their games last night. Brandon Ingram, a no-show in the fourth quarter on the bench. Willie Green had him on the bench. And then brings him in for, you know, the last, like, what was it, a minute, I guess, when Zion is hurt.
Basically,
But then you've already taken Brandon Ingram's rhythm, if he had any. You know, he's coming off stone cold off the bench. And now having to play the final minute of a game. So I don't know if that's necessarily Willie Green's fault, because I guess you can't forecast an injury happening. But, you know, Zion gets hurt. Now you've got to throw Ingram back in. And it was kind of a mess in those last 2 minutes, and a very costly turnover by Jose Alvarado, giving the Lakers the opportunity to go up 2 possessions. But back to Zion, I kind of felt like we were stripped of that first big playoff moment. Not to refer back to my hometown, but Ja Morant kind of had his big coming out party in a play-in game when they took on the Warriors back in 2021. Was able to put up, you know, 35 points and go take it to overtime, hit a couple clutch buckets. That was his first real big playoff moment. Zion now kind of stripped of that because he's not able to finish the game. Do you think we were kind of stripped of that moment from Zion?
I think we were. I mean, he's having one of the games of his life, one of the best games, arguably the best performance of his NBA career in this game, doing everything he could to just keep him in it. You know, every time it felt like the Lakers had an answer, Zion would hit a few buckets, and here come the Pelicans.
Yeah.
They're right back in the game. You know, who knows if he's on the court how the last few minutes of this game goes. Does Zion hit the game winner? Does Zion get the last few buckets? You know, is he shooting free throws to clinch the game for the Pelicans? We'll not know. You know, playing like he had been all night, I wonder how the last few minutes of this game would have gone. And now even worse, now he's going to miss their next game.
Yeah.
I mean, if the Pelicans lose to the Kings now and are out completely, I mean, this moment where he gets injured is going to be where the season completely changed for New Orleans. It would have been the first moment of his career to lift the team on his back and get to the playoffs and go from that to potentially you're not on the court and now your team's going home. We were stripped of that and potentially more playoff moments from Zion.
Yeah, and I hate to make a mockery of it, but, you know, I was talking about those memes earlier on Twitter. Someone tweeted out that, oh, no, Mariah Mills did voodoo on Zion.
Boy.
But all right, going back to the game, and I'm not trying to make mockery. I just thought it was funny. I was laughing so much last night, all the memes that just came in too. But I just thought I'd add it. But going back to the game, the Lakers made 14 threes while shooting 40% from three compared to the Pelicans 9 triples. Coming into the game, what I mentioned yesterday, target number was 15. Lakers were 14-4. This season, when they made 15 or more threes in a game, they finished just one shy. And that kind of felt that stretch between the second quarter and the third quarter where they had, you know, guys like Taron Prince hitting a couple of threes, Gabe Vincent hitting a couple of threes, D'Angelo Russell knocking in his fair share. That kind of, to me, moved the needle in this game. It kept it a little enough out of reach to where the Pelicans, if they kept on, you know, coming down and hitting all those twos that Zion was getting at the cup, it still wasn't enough to come back and take the lead. In my opinion, the Lakers' three-point shooting is what moved the needle for them. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, just like in past games this year. I mean, you gave the stat last night, 14-4 in games where they hit 15 or more. They hit 14 last night and won the game. So, yeah. I mean, pretty close to reaching that target number that we talked about. The key for us was, you know, whoever shoots the three better in this game was probably going to win.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's the Lakers. It started with Russell, you know, obviously leading the way with five. But, look, they were able to spread the wealth from three. It wasn't like, you know, one guy hit all of them. I mean, he hit five. Reeves had two. LeBron had one. You said Torian Prince had two. Gabe Vincent added two. So they were able to also spread it out, have multiple guys feeling it from three and you know, presenting a multifaceted threat. So it wasn't just like, oh, LeBron had six threes and Russell had six threes. And they spread it out. I mean, they had a bunch of threes spread across six different guys. I mean, that also helped to pay dividends in this one.
So D'Angelo Russell, Gabe Vincent, Rui Hachimura, Austin Reaves, the main complementary pieces for this Lakers group combined for 59 points last night, I think was very important, instrumental for them getting this win. And you know, we talked about it yesterday. LeBron's going to have a mismatch on Herb Jones, who they actually, you know, had matched up against for a majority of the game. A couple instances of it, I was like, you know, we talked about that today, and LeBron hits a fadeaway over Herb Jones and kind of winks at the camera. I was like, well, I guess he's kind of looking at us. And then Jonas Valanciunas is a very finesse center. And he kind of got bounced around by AD a bunch. So you knew they were going to win those matchups, but you did not know if your complementary pieces were going to outshine that of the Pelicans, and the Lakers were able to do that, 59 total points. How big was the complementary pieces last night?
It was huge. I mean, you needed these guys to get involved. Again, it was one of my keys. I think it was one of all of our keys, was that you need to get the other guys involved to be able to win this game. These guys have been that part of that major resurgence for this team at the end of the season or throughout the year, really for the last couple months, but especially over the last few weeks. You know, they've been – you know, that centerpiece of that resurgence is that these guys are all starting to play a lot better around LeBron and AD. And when the lights were the brightest, like, they came to play.
Yeah.
They showed up. The Lakers needed them, and they answered the call. This performance out of the guys not named LeBron and Anthony Davis is what can make this team so dangerous in the playoffs, because they have several really capable players. I mean, D'Angelo Russell, he's done it for a few years now, a very established player at this point. The fact that he's your third option, I mean, that's incredibly dangerous to the teams that they'll see coming up, including the Denver Nuggets. But then Reaves as well, obviously one to watch there. We know what Gabe Vincent has been able to do last year on that run in Miami.
Yes, yeah.
If he can pick up even a fraction of that, I think he could be massively valuable to this Lakers team. And Hachimura just continues to get better. Feels like every time we see him, he's getting just a little bit better, and he was good last night. Oftentimes, it's whoever has the best role players, the best bench guys, that wins these playoff games, that wins these series, and that wins championships. And we've seen it time and time again. If the Lakers can have this going forward with any amount of consistency, watch out.
Yeah. So this was a spirited win for the Lakers, starved off the Pelicans, and their rally in that second half to now advance to face the number two seeded Nuggets, the same team that bounced them in the Western Conference Finals last year. So we get the rematch we wanted. The Lakers will certainly be heavy underdogs entering the series, plus 7.5 for Saturday's matchup. Nuggets favored by 7.5. But the Lakers are confident in their new lineup, their high-powered offense. They think they can get it done, and I do too, for a couple reasons, and you mentioned one of them. At the beginning of the season, and even in the offseason, when the Lakers made the acquisitions they made, adding Gabe Vincent, adding Torian Prince. I liked the Christian Wood addition. Now he's out.
Yeah.
And I liked Cam Reddish as well. He's not really going to be too much involved going forward. But Gabe Vincent was very, very important. And they really kept the same team they had last year in terms of the guys that were making big impacts. So they got better. And they're deep and they're lengthy. So I already like the Lakers coming into the year. Now, obviously, it wouldn't be the Lakers without them playing like crap for the first half of the season and magically turning it around, and they have, and now we are where we are now. But this is the best opportunity to play the Nuggets. They're the healthiest they've been all year. Christian Wood, Jared Vanderbilt, likely going to miss a big portion or if not all this series. But when you look at the Lakers all season long, this is the healthiest they've been. LeBron is in a lot better condition than he was last year, basically playing on one leg. His three-point numbers were drastically affected by that last year. This year, he has a career-high shooting percentage from three. And also, this team is playing their best basketball since the All-Star break, now 18-9 in games, top five in record, top five in field goal percentage and three-point shooting. This is the Lakers at their best right now. And I think also one big key in this matchup is Gabe Vincent, who was a pest last year against Jamal Murray in the final series. Murray got his own, but Gabe Vincent was, you know, having to play like a starter and like a big role. He's not really having to do that on this team. They just have him as now another piece, another domino to throw in. I think this is a really good matchup for the Lakers. I think the Lakers win the series. And I think if you can get D'Angelo Russell, who last year averaged 6.3 points per game in the Western Conference Finals last year. Jamal Murray, 32.5. An otherworldly performance from Murray. A horrible performance from Russell.
Right.
And we've seen Russell has been really good this season. If you can get D'Angelo Russell to average 15 points, 18 points a night, hit in three or four threes a night like he's done this season, I think the Lakers get it done. How do you think they fare?
Better than last year, in my opinion, because you've got more gas in the tank. I know I talked about that, you know, throughout the week as we've talked about, you know, should the Lakers tank to not face the Nuggets? And I said no, because, you know, there's no point. Why wait? You got enough gas in the tank right now. Why not? You're the healthiest you've been all year. You've had a healthy year altogether, really, between AD and LeBron, especially. I mean, their healthiest year in a little bit, especially in L.A. You've got a better role-playing group than last year with the addition of Gabe Vincent, and he's been, again, outstanding. He was great last night. Can he be great again in the Nuggets series?
Yeah.
You know, that'll be a big thing to watch for me. And serious momentum. You know, why wait in these playoffs? And maybe the momentum starts to fade a little bit. You got it. You get an 18-9 record since the All-Star break. You win a big play-in game last night. You're at your best point right now, your healthiest point right now. You know, can they get this shocker done? I mean, they're in the best spot right now. I have two questions that will stick with me throughout the series. Is the health going to hold up throughout the entire series, or will injuries become an issue? And what exactly are you going to get from those role-playing guys? I know they've been good. They have to keep being good. If they don't keep being good, I don't think they fare very well in this series. The Nuggets are still a buzzsaw. They're still very good. The Lakers need that kind of consistent performance from their role players, and I think they can get it done too.
Yeah. Last year, I compared the Lakers. You ever played Jenga before?
Yeah.
I compared the Lakers to Jenga because as long as it's standing up tall with all the blocks on it, you're all good. But you take one piece out, one injury, right? Then it gets a little wobbly. Then another one out. That's how this Lakers team is. They're literally a Jenga game. If you pull one of these blocks out, an injury, this whole thing is a mess.
Right.
So they've got to stay healthy. And I know there's no X's and O's to that. You know, it is what it is. They've got to stay healthy. Anthony Davis also experienced back spasms last night. Now he will be 100%, he said, for the Nuggets game on Saturday. But just little stuff like that, they've got to stay healthy. Or this thing could just get out of hand.
Right.
And last year, I think they're better off this year compared to last year because they played them in the Western Conference Finals after kind of sludging through two teams in the Grizzlies and Warriors, very high-paced. You know, Warriors are running gun, trying to get on the perimeter. Grizzlies, a younger team, similar. John Morant running down the court, trying to find open guys. Now they play this team first round, fresher legs. I think this is the best opportunity they will have. And really, think about it. Victor Wembanyama kind of altered this whole thing because they beat the Nuggets, right? The Nuggets go from the one seed, now drop to the two. Now they've got to play the Lakers. That's the toughest draw in the first round, in my opinion, out of all these teams. And then if the Nuggets somehow win, they got to play the Suns or the Timberwolves, two teams that match up well against them. Victor Wembanyama kind of messed everything up for the Nuggets.
Yeah,
if you look at it in that perspective,
wild to think about. Yeah, I mean, because he changed the Nuggets. You know, changed the Nuggets' perspective. Where now, instead of getting, you know, potentially the Pelicans or Kings, and then I can't remember who the four or five
Clippers,
is.
Mavericks.
Clippers, I mean, you know, based on how those teams have looked this year, because the Mavericks have been good, I mean, recently, but off at times, and they kind of fell flat a couple weeks ago, so you don't know. And then the Clippers, and we talked about how they've fallen off.
In terms of matchups, though, I mean,
I'd much rather see those two teams and the Pelicans or Kings than the Lakers, Suns, and Timberwolves.
Exactly. Because the Timberwolves play almost the exact same style the Nuggets do. The Suns, and the reason why I think they'll beat the Timberwolves, they play totally different. It's, you know, small ball lineups. You've got to now bring out Karl-Anthony Towns, and he's got to guard Kevin Durant or one of our big guys. You know, that
because there's five shooters on the floor for Phoenix most of the time.
Exactly. So it's just matchup disadvantages, and the Lakers have so much size and so much depth. You know, I think it could possibly muck up that pick and roll that Jokic and Murray did all last year in that Western Conference Finals. You've now got a guy in Gabe Vincent that could possibly stop it. Love talking NBA, but let's head to a quick break. When we come back, we'll give our best bets of the night. Stay right here on Overtime.
Fan Run Radio is proud to present the 37 Club, an exclusive community of the lifeblood of Fan Run Radio. You, our biggest supporters. With a membership to the 37 Club, you receive exclusive content like podcasts, blogs, and videos, giveaways, and access to exclusive merchandise and events. So join the 37 Club today by going to fanrunradio.com.
Are you in need of a smile makeover? Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Costa at Knoxville Smiles, and if you're ready to improve your smile, replace teeth that are missing, make your dentures tighter, add implants to your mouth, whatever you may need, we're here to discuss a wide range of easy, pain-free cosmetic and restorative procedures that can create a glowing, radiant smile that you've always dreamed of. Don't wait any longer. The time is now. Call us today at Knoxville Smiles and schedule your appointment at 865-539-1776 or go online to knoxvillesmiles.com.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Are you tired of the same boring workouts that don't get you the results that you want? Check out HotWorks. With infrared light therapy and personalized wellness options, you'll be able to get the perfect workout every time. With the hot yoga or any of the other isometric options at HotWorks, you'll feel the detoxification right away. Hop on over to 10839 Hardin Valley Road or visit any of the other Knoxville locations to get started on your personalized journey.
At Wholesale Supply, we're more than just a plumbing, electrical, and HVAC supplier. We're your partners in success. Join our family of customers today and experience the benefits of partnering with us. Enjoy free local delivery so you can focus on what you do best, getting the job done. With wholesale pricing, you'll save big on every purchase. Plus, our fast, friendly support team is here to assist you every step of the way. Our vast selection from top manufacturers ensures you'll find everything you need all under one roof. To find a location near you, visit wholesalesupply.us for more. And remember, Wholesale Supply, open to the public.
At First Bank, we're proud of more than 100 years of financial strength. But on game days, our numbers look even better. When they're lighting up a scoreboard printed on a jersey or in bold type on the sports page. We know there's strength in numbers and nothing stronger than the bonds formed around local teams. And the return on this investment? Neighbors coming together again year after year. Bank where community is number one. First Bank. Bank local. Get more team spirit. Member FDIC.
All right, back here on Overtime. Time for our best bets of the night. A little bit easier tonight with some NBA action.
Yes.
No longer have to dive into the archives of MLB or NHL. I'll get my first one of the night, Heat plus 5.5. Look, I think the Sixers win this game. Eric Spoelstra is too good of a mind, however, to let this thing get out of control. And in NBA, you know, that 5.5 kind of gives you that cushion of, You know, if it gets into a free throw competition late, you hope that you can stay in it. Bam Adebayo on Joel Embiid, I think, is an intriguing matchup as well. Adebayo is not going to get completely backed down like a couple of these other guys do with Embiid. I don't love the Heat as much as I did last year, but I still think Eric Spoelstra, the guys they have on this team in terms of playoff experience, I think it bodes well. I'm taking Heat plus 5.5.
Going the other way. I fought myself on this one because of what the Heat did last year, but this is not last year's Miami Heat. Still a good team. Bam Adebayo, again, he'll do okay on Joel Embiid, but Embiid will still get his. And the Heat are missing too many of those pieces from last year, namely Gabe Vincent. They're missing too much from that last year's team. They've been too inconsistent this year for me to trust them. So I'm going with the Sixers here. Embiid comes back. They're instantly contenders again. He and Maxey and company will be able to do enough offensively. And I think it's going to be too much for Miami to handle. Give me the Sixers at minus 5.5.
Yeah, my next best bet is going to be Hawks plus 3. Look, Ice Trey is back. Trey Young back in the lineup. This is one of the most disappointing teams in the NBA, by the way. The Hawks were supposed to be a division winner, and now they're 36 and 40, whatever it is. If they play the Sixers, either of these teams, they play the Sixers, they'll be like 11 games back from where the Sixers are. It's just how the big of a difference it is between the West and the East at the back end.
Yeah.
But I'm taking the Hawks here. They have been in this spot before, so have the Bulls. But the Hawks have done well recently in the play-in game. I still think if they get it together that they can get this done. I'm backing the talent here. I think the talent on this roster is better. They just haven't played like it. The Bulls, I like DeMar DeRozan, and the rest of it's kind of like, a toy box, just a bunch of mismatch. Vucevic, Andre Drummond, I'm backing the Hawks here because of what they've done so far and at their best, what they can be. Hawks plus 3.
I guess we'll agree to disagree on both play-in games this week, which is why I love the play-in. I'm going to go with Bulls minus 3.5. The young Murray thing has not worked. We've talked about it at length on the show. Very disappointing year. Yeah, Trae Young's back, but, he's back just now. How's that going to work? Is he slots back in? And I don't know. Trae Young's been good in the playoffs in the past, but is he going to be good enough to help this team win a game with how inconsistent and disappointing they've been really all year? I don't know. I think DeMar DeRozan does enough to get Chicago over the finish line tonight. I think he's the guy to watch. I think if he plays well enough to have a 25-30 point night or more, I think Chicago wins this game and wins it by 5-6 points. So give me the Bulls at minus 3.5 tonight.
All right, Dawson and I going against each other tonight. Those are our best bets of the night. I guess we're on either side of the games tonight. So you can pick your poison. You can take me or you can take Dawson. We'll be back in the next hour to talk about the Warriors. Is the dynasty bricked? We'll be back on Overtime.